Welcome to the Talking Transformation podcast. I'm your podcast host, Peter Ahmad, recording from Cape Town, South Africa, since June 2019. The Talking Transformation podcast provides an open and accessible platform for built environment professionals and interest groups to share their reflections and aspirations relating to the transformation of places and spaces in South Africa. It's intended to be a celebration of the individuals and community groups who are supporting formal and informal processes that are addressing the challenges of South Africa's history and shaping the future of our neighbourhoods and cities. Our latest episode of the Talking Transformation podcast picks up from a couple of episodes ago when we considered the genesis story of the Development Action Group's Contractors and Developers Academy. We reconnect with the theme of micro-developments and the Academy with two members of the Contractor and Developers Academy, also known as the CDA, and two participants of the Academy, one developer, Luvo Mayapi, and contractor, Brian Bango. Both share Eastern Cape heritage and reflect on their transformative experience in the Western Cape within the small-scale rental sector. These are inspiring stories from inspirational individuals who are helping shape the sector through their business pursuits and the collective activism as members of the fledgling umbrella body, the Township Development Forum, or the TDF. It's a special episode and one I'm very excited to share. I think it clearly demonstrates the energy and potential of the sector and the passion of all the participants. There's a clear message for the financial sector and big funders. Get involved and get informed about the shifting dynamics and opportunities in the township property market. Listen on to find out more. And as always, we hope you enjoy the episode. So it's just gone 10:30 on Saturday morning, Saturday the 8th of July, and it's absolutely fantastic to be back in Observatory with our friends and the team here at the Development Action Group, Contractor and Developers Academy. I'm joined by two of the colleagues from DAG, as well as two past participants of the Contractor and Developers Academy, the CDA, and I'm going to ask each to introduce themselves. Let me start with the Chief Operating Officer of the CDA. I'm here with Kuma. Kuma, welcome. Thanks so much for having us back today. Really appreciate it.
Morning, Pete. It's a pleasure being part of the podcast again. My name is Kuma Giyose. I'm the project coordinator at DAG. I'm working on the Contractor and Developer Academy, which is an enterprise development program focusing on capacity building for emerging contractors and developers. And we also provide technical support for the different SMMEs. Thank you.
Thank you. And joining you from the CDA team, we have Nosive. Nosive, welcome. Great to be back here with you today. How are you?
Good morning, Pete and the team. Thank you very much for having me. I'm feeling a bit nervous, but yeah, I'm also excited for the podcast. So my name is Nosive Ngawe, and I'm the project officer at DAG, working with Ukuma and the team on the Contractor and Developer Academy. Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks for being part of this morning. Rainy day. We're not sure if it's rain, sun, or shine, what's going on out there, but it's lovely to have you here with us today, Nosive. Thank you. And then Mr. Brian Bango, what an absolute pleasure. We've known each other for a couple of years. We've been talking about this for a long time, Brian, but it's lovely to have you here with us today. How are you this morning?
I'm great. I'm well. Yes, this is Brian Bango from Eastena Building Solutions, a building contractor who also attended the CDA program here at DAG. Eastena Building Solutions, we focus on construction of the small-scale rental units. So yeah, I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
No, thank you for being part of it, Brian. As I say, I'm really, really delighted we're finally getting a chance to sit down and put some of this on record. And then joining us for the first time we meet today, Luvo, absolute pleasure to meet you, sir.
Thank you for having me. My name is Luvo Mayapi. I'm a micro developer from Delft. It's the first time to be here. I hope I will be having a very good time in this interview. Thank you.
No, thank you. Again, giving up your time on a Saturday to come and join us, it really means a lot, Luvo, so thank you. Before we get into the experiences and the reflections from Brian and Luvo, again, just a question for Kuma and Nosi. Obviously, we talked a couple of weeks ago about the genesis of the CDA, how it came to be, and that episode is available for anybody who hasn't been able to listen to it so far. But having listened back to it, Kuma, or thinking back to our conversations, any further reflections? You've had another graduation since that period, if I'm not mistaken. But just any thoughts over the last couple of weeks since we last spoke, either things to celebrate or observations about our conversation last time?
As you mentioned that we've completed the different graduations, we touched on this a bit, basically around our capacity building programs under the CDA. One that is focusing on the emerging contractors. We run those annual training programs on an annual basis where we're focusing on the business administration, financial management, project management, even the technical skills and how to interpret the different plans, do your BOQs, costings, and all of that. The program started around about March, and it ended in June. And last week, we had our graduation ceremony. We had to celebrate the dedication of the participants. We had 19 contractors on that program. We were joined by our industry players or stakeholders, your Masters Builders Association, the City of Cape Town's Business Hub, the provincial government around the Economic Empowerment Department under Human Settlements. We also had Citra Development, another developer was focusing in the Blue Downs area. So I think there's excitement around how do we work collaboratively as a sector and not duplicate and more towards alignment of synergies between the different entities. And I think we share the same vision and the same goal with all the partners that our focus is to say, how do we uplift and support emerging contractors in the space? I think that is a powerful one. And then also we had the small scale developer course. So it started in April, ended in June. So what we do on the course, we cover from your conceptualizing of a development up until the different modules focusing on feasibility studies, getting your building plans approval, planning processes, understanding the financial environment, doing your feasibility valuations, market analysis, and all of that, up until your asset management. What we do in terms of the outcome of the course, the participants usually present their development proposal to a panel of industry experts or industry players. And fortunately, this year, we're joined by the WCPDF, Dion, who was chairing that group of panels.
And that's the Western Cape Property Developers Forum, right?
Yes, the Western Cape Property Development Forum. We are also joined by African Bank from the financing perspective. We are joined by Simon, who is coming from the Town Planning Fraternity. And then we got another developer who's operating in Stellenbosch. So it was a panel of those industry experts. And I think the feedback also there was quite positive. They could see the potential also of the small-scale rental sector, that it requires that collaboration also and different mechanisms. We also need to look at, yes, whilst we're engaging on the regulations to enable compliance, but also there's additional support or mentorship in the space that is required. Entrepreneurship tends to be a lonely journey. And if you don't have a sounding board, I think if you don't have a sounding board, you'd find a situation where you're on your own out there.
No feedback loop mechanism, anything
yes.
like that. Yeah.
So even them, they raise their hands to say, how do we support these developers in terms of growing their businesses and growing up the property ladder or the development ladder?
Fantastic. No, it sounds like you've been busy. Sounds like you've been properly busy. And Nosiwe, I mean, your reflections on the last couple of months, been busy, as we've heard. But just any thoughts from your side before we hear from those who've either taken part in previous versions and the value of what you've been doing?
Yeah, I think what stood out for me with this year's class, especially the contractor course, it was more of like an applied construction management, because they would apply everything that they learn immediately into their businesses. So we had people giving feedback as we learn. When we move to the next module, I use that, and this is what had happened in my business. For example, the people were used to pay an accountant to just to get the tax certificate, and they didn't know that they actually can do that themselves. So people actually learn that what they didn't know, and also they know what they do not know, and they know where to go to get that information or that service. So I think for me, that has right stood out for this year is that as we move to the next module, people would actually apply what we learn and they come and give feedback and say, this really helped me in my business. So yeah, I was very happy with this year's class.
Great job, Nosi. And again, huge appreciation to you and the team for the services and the program that you've put together. I think more strength to you. And as long as you're doing it, we'll be behind you in whichever way we can to support and communicate. And Let's come to two of the participants. As I say, there's Brian and Luvo. I think, Brian, you and I met maybe 2 or 3 years ago when I was studying with the team here, and I was kind enough to spend some time with the DAG team. And this was a real of interest to me as a town planner working in the city of Cape Town at that stage, trying to understand this phenomena, this massive growth, this what I was seeing it in Dunoon driving past every week, that Dunoon was changing fundamentally from what even in the 7 or 8 years I've been in the Western Cape. And it was this, but how are we responding to this? I was responsible for the forward planning, for the policy development in the city at that time. I'm trying to think about, you know, what's our response to this? What's going on? And obviously through DAG, the CDA, it was obvious that there was already a very serious engagement taking place with those who were involved with it, and at the same trying to bridge into and understand with the city how that could be more sustainable in terms of being something that's happening, but there's no sense of governance or arrangements. You've been in the contracting side of it. You've worked, you've built some of these things. Tell us a bit about the journey that brought you to ultimately that work with or participate in that course. It'd be really interesting to hear that story and understand what some of those challenges in those early days were, and how's it going for you in July 2023? Where do you find yourself?
The journey of myself getting involved in the building construction sector started the time when I arrived in Cape Town. It was in 1992 when I came to Cape Town from the Eastern Cape, Engqeleni. A young boy, obviously staying in Langa, renting a shack at the back of someone's house in Langa. My mom is a domestic worker, and obviously, you know, she could not afford to buy a house. So she resorted to renting a shack in Langa. And then from there, we moved to Constantia, where we stayed at the back, like a cottage, at the back of my mom's madam's house. Then from there, my aunt was staying in a place called West Lake Squatter Camp. And then from there, fortunately, my mom got a space as well within the West Lake Squatter Camp, where she constructed her own shack. And then I think it was in 1995 when my aunt passed away. And then the same year, there was a shack fire. So this guy is coming from Eshibin. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. He wanted to fix himself something to eat, and he is like out, you know, he's like drunk. So he was trying to cook, and then obviously I think he dozed off, he slept, and then his shack caught fire. And obviously, you know, in a squatter camp, shacks are close to each other. Our shack caught fire. I was just in my deep sleep, and I just heard someone shouting, "Umlilo, umlilo," meaning fire, fire. I was like in a deep sleep. And then until I just woke up, the whole shack where I was sleeping in was just full of fire. And I just got up and I went straight to the door. You know, when I held the door handle, it was hot. I let it go. And then I think there was a guy outside who kicked the door open, and it slammed me on my face. I fell. He came inside, and then I think he fell on top of me, and then he felt that, okay, this is a human being. And then he managed to pull me out. But anyway, to cut the long story short, it's been in my life the whole time since 95 that, you know what, Brian, you came to Cape Town, you stayed in a shack, you are a victim of a shack fire. You know how it is to stay in a shack. You know how it is to lose everything, and you just walk out of the shack with just your pajamas, your books, your everything is in there. You have to start from beginning with your life, with your clothes, with your schoolwork, things like that. So for me to be in the space of constructing affordable houses is very close to my heart. And that is why every time DAG called me to participate in an event or to come into a meeting, to come and interact or have an opinion or have an engagement, I always avail myself, because I feel that this is a very important sector for me to participate in, because it will help me to prohibit another shack fire by building an affordable home for someone. Like recently, I just got 2 companies that approached me to build a structure, I think for Nelson Mandela Day in Khayelitsha, for a beneficiary, which I am definitely sure that beneficiary, as we speak now, they are staying in a shack. Hence, they want to build the beneficiary a proper structure. So for me to be involved in this also led to me working at a company called iBuild. Then from there, I was involved in project management, where I had to go out there to our clients and see how their projects are going. And from there, it really gave me a sense of wanting to own, or not wanting to own, but maybe wanting to get more involved in the affordable housing. Because when I went out there deep into the township, I saw some structures which I deemed not, you know, structurally sound. And I saw that people are just grabbing anyone who says, I know how to build. No, I've built, I was working at maybe a site somewhere. Maybe the guy was a laborer. He didn't know how the whole thing starts from the bottom up. So, you know, you would see structures with a wall that is skew. I mean, that wall can fall anytime. You would see that the roof is not properly built. Any wind that can come can rip that roof away. So I said to myself, you know what? I think let me play in this space, you know, the construction space, specifically the affordable housing space. And I met with DAG, I think that was in 2016 or 2017. So then I wanted to get myself aligned with organizations that are within this space, because iBuild Home Loans was a company that was providing finance for people who want to build the small scale rental units. So doing that gave me exposure to buildings in the township that are not finished, probably lack of finance, or probably the contractor ran away with money. So I said to myself, you know what, Brian, get into this space, but obviously do it the right way. So I went to DAG. DAG said, okay, Brian, there is this CDA, which is the Contractor Developer Academy, that they are running. I should apply. I applied and I finished the course. And the amount of work, or rather the amount of knowledge and expertise and skills that I've learned from the course are actually phenomenal. Because I was always looking at a plan and I was asking myself, how does one read this thing and start to take this thing out of the paper into something that is concrete, you can see, you can touch and feel, you can go inside it? Because sometimes you look at the plan and you see the floor plan, you see the elevation, and you're like, oh, so it's gonna look like this. And I'm so proud of myself and owing it to DAG as well for upskilling me to know how to take something that is from a page, which is a building plan, to something that you can walk into and feel that you are a human being. Because for me, I know we've had a lot of interactions with people where they said, no, we have to teach people how to build shacks. And I'm like, you need to teach people how to build shacks. That doesn't, to me, that doesn't bring any or restore any dignity to someone. But if you build someone a brick and mortar structure, you know that person is in something that brings value to them. Because I would say some people, when they look at people who are staying in shacks, it's like, they stay in shacks. But when you stay in a house, your dignity is restored, people respect you, and things like that. So I'm very happy to be part of this. So, yeah.
Thank you. That's quite a story, Brian. And again, I think brings, you can understand that full journey that, and the importance of, as you say, the tangible outcome of your effort. Yes. And that the outcome is not just the bricks and mortar structured correctly, but the dignity that brings with it. I think it's really powerful messages. And Luvo, if we come to you, Brian talks about the importance of doing it the right way. You're in the game of developing. I think you have three buildings and structures. Perhaps you can tell us a bit about that, how you came and the challenges you faced. And why is it important to do it the right way? Why is it not easier to take the shortcut and find a way? So I'd love to hear your story and what brought you again to this space with the CDA.
Firstly, let me start by giving a background of where do I come from. Firstly, from Eastern Cape, came into Cape Town in 2003. And then I was living in a shack with the aunt and cousins. And that's the time when I started working at a coffee shop. Then move forward, I drove a taxi. That's when I got some few bucks so that I can go back to school. And then after that, I managed to move out of KTC and then to Delfside. That was around about 2008. That's when I was living in somebody's backyard. in the shack at the backyard. I think that time we were renting about 100 rand to 150. And then whenever I was in that shack, I used to look up to the people who owned houses. So I told myself that one day I have to build a home for my family so that whenever they come to Cape Town, they can at least have a place to stay. In 2010, I managed to move out of the shack from the back, get an RTP house for the family. And then after 2010, I wanted to build 3 years after, that was in 2013, I wanted to build. But luckily, I knew someone who used to work in the construction, who used to work in the company that was in Khayelitsha at that time. That company used to work under deck. That's when I got information, how do I move about? So this person advised that I should get plans first. And then I didn't know anything about the planning. I didn't know anything about the costing. That's when I started asking about budgeting. When everything was breakdown to me, I saw that the funds that I had that time were not enough. That's when I waited until 2014. I started submitting plans in 2014. I think it was about May, June. I think they were only approved in October, November. That's when I started building. But what I can say is that I was lucky enough to have a strong team that was surrounding me in terms of where to go, in terms of advice, where to start in terms of sourcing material. The fact that I got a proper advice in terms of planning, because around about that time, there were people who encroached where that house was demolished. And then I thought, and I don't want to follow to be in the same route they were. Then that's when I thought it's either I do it the right way or I mustn't do it. Then, luckily enough, I managed to build. It took about 4 or 5 months because of the challenge of funds, because the budget that I had that time was not enough. I started November 2014, but I think I only finished the fifth room in Delft in May 2015. And then move forward, and then I managed to move out of the township of Delft. That was in 2016, look for a better structure somewhere. And then again, I followed the same route of submitting plans, all that stuff. But to cut the matter short, I attended a course last year from DEC, where they put us in this course as all the developers last year. Attending the course was more of formalizing what I used to get from the people, where we got a booklet, get to know what are the right rules of building, because I'm not trained as a builder. Attending the course was more of an eye-opener in terms of steps to be followed. So that's where I am for now. Thank you.
I think this is an important distinction. On the one side, we've got yourself, Brian, as the contractor, putting the materials together, putting the quantities together, managing a budget and building. The ideas and the properties that have been made available, Luvo, is from your side. And the marriage of those two, of making sure that you don't squander the opportunity, that there's a financial savvy, not only in terms of rentals and the financial model, but that the construction costs are also covered. What were the elements from the course that you learned that assisted you? You say some of it was telling you what you knew, but formalizing. But were there certain things that did come as a surprise, what you didn't know in the program?
Yes, definitely. It was an eye-opener for me. I was very excited to go out there and be a building contractor. But I didn't know that the market does not speak that. Like, just as an example, I thought if I go to a supplier and tell them that I'm a contractor, I will get preferential rates or cheaper rates for materials, because obviously you would also want to make a bit of a profit when you're building. The eye-opener for me was that the market will only recognize you as a contractor if you had a history with them. But if you don't have a history with them in terms of buying from the supplier, you will be given a normal price, like a walk-in client. But if you are a regular there, then they know that, okay, Brian is a regular, so we now can give him a better rate. So my first few projects were very eye-opening for me in a few things, but the one for buying things at a normal price, for me, it was an eye-opener. Like now with my suppliers, they give me preferential rates and I can call them and tell them I need X, Y, and Z. They know that I will pay. They deliver the stuff on site. But back then, there were delays because they don't know me, but now they take me seriously because now I've been trading, or rather doing business with them for a long time. So, yeah.
This is a track record.
And yes, that track record.
Track record,
there we go.
Helps.
Yes, it helps.
Luvo, anything that perhaps reinforced or was useful in terms of the lessons learned through the course last year?
What I learned a lot from the course is the fact that when we build from the townships, we get contractors who say they know. Sometimes you find out they don't know. Because if you're self-managing the project, sometimes you might be given the information that's not correct. For example, I've learned there that when you start building, you have to wait for your foundation to dry up, that waiting period. As the structure goes up, for example, if you put your slab in, you must tell the guys 21 days waiting period. Sometimes they would rush to finish the project, but at least that information that you know where you can lead there. Because what I've picked up from contractors, they work so that they can finish. So it, as well as the costing of the projects in terms of going to the right people, in terms of calculating what materials do you need, all that stuff. So that's basically what I've learned from.
If we go back to your first development, you've already talked about some of the challenges you were seeing around encroachments and so forth. What were some of the biggest challenges that you faced when you were trying to get that first development off the ground, whether it was in respect of finance, whether it was in respect of getting the permissions from the municipality? Just take us back to that time. And if somebody's listening to this saying, I have ambition to do this, but I don't even know where to start, what do you think the things they're going to face based on your experiences?
The biggest challenge was to get the plans approved, because when I was referred, go to this architect, he will do the drawings for you. Plans were submitted and then back and forth, fix this, fix that, of which that's why it took about 6 months in order for that to be approved. But the major challenge on that one, it's because I wanted to build more units, of which I was told in order to have such number of doors, in order to have such number of units, you must rezone the yard, of which it was very expensive to rezone the yard. That's when I decided to build more of a house, and then that was a major challenge for me.
And in terms of accessing finances and so forth, was this something that you had to seek, or had you been able to make the savings in the lead up to that?
Firstly, I approached my bank, that is Standard Bank. I told them that I want to build in this area. They prescored me and say I do qualify for a certain amount. But when I attached the address to when they pick up that it was in the township, that's when they said it's a high risk. Or given the number of reasons, they said they can't fund me there. And then that's when I went back to my savings and then credit cards, my stock fell money. And then I remember in 2014 when I built it, I was flat broke during Christmas, because that's the time I was trying to finish the first two rooms of my project. So the major challenge is financing. It's a planning phase and as well as financing of the projects.
Brian, you'll have seen this from many different angles, from the time that you're working in that finance space and obviously now from the contracting side. Tell us a bit about how listening to Luvo, these either resonate or, again, your experience of some of these challenges from both somebody within the sector and now somebody contributing to the building side of it.
Working at the financier, there was a number of clients where I thought to myself, you know what, if I was the financier, I would have financed this project. But because of the strict criteria from the financiers, which I understand, because obviously they want to minimize the risk and whatever, but there are some instances where I would have said, no, you know what, this client, I think we can finance them because they've got a good affordability, they've got a big property. So if we were to look at the feasibility of the project and not the affordability, because sometimes, or rather where I was working, they were looking at the affordability of the applicant and not the feasibility of the project. But now when you look at the feasibility of the project, you can actually see that there is less risk, because the amount of rooms that you're going to build there, they will generate enough income to repay the loan. But now when you look at the affordability of the client and you want to base your financing on there, it's not going to work. And some of the people that would come, to apply, it's people that want to do like your multi-million rand projects. But now the affordability hits them because the financier does not give the loan based on the feasibility, but on the affordability, which that was the case. But I think that's why I left that space, because I saw that it's not speaking to what I believe in. It's not speaking to what's on the ground, because what's on the ground is speaking different. And obviously, as someone who knows what's happening on the ground, I try to convince the directors and those who makes the decisions. But they saw me as someone who is a lunatic or someone who doesn't know what they're talking about. So I left there, and obviously with the help of DAG, we've managed to come up, or rather establish, a forum, which that forum looks at things like that, where we approach the financing houses, your banks, and obviously different investors, to say, look, we've got this sector that needs financing, your Louvres of this world. These people, they are determined to be developers. And it's not something that they want to do on one property, then they are done. They want to take it forward. So create a product that speaks to this sector and not the one that speaks to the individual. So looking at financing, I think it's something that most of the micro developers are facing. I think a lot of them are facing that problem because of the areas that they stay in. They are normal banks, if I can name and shame, your FNB, Standard Bank, Capitec, and all these banks, they don't speak to this sector. Like Luva just said, his own bank, I don't know how many years he's been banking with them, they said, no, your place is high risk, we can't finance you. Why not? I mean, this is your client who's been banking with you for years, but you don't want to help them out when they need money from you. So yeah, it's something that we just have to look into.
On that, how is the conversation emerging, whether it's through the TDF, the Township Developers Forum, which I know you played a part in? What's the CDA's role in that, in terms of acting not just as an advocate for the contractors and the developers, but also to engage the municipalities and the financial institutions? Yeah. Bit on this finance side, because clearly that barrier is, you can have everything. You can have your title deed, you can have your building plans, you can have the right zoning. But this thing, this is where you either pass go or don't pass go. So your thoughts on that, about where we can potentially take this, or what your experience has been to date, Kuma?
I think he's touching on a pressure point right now. Over the years, just tracking back a bit, majority of the focus in the small scale rental space has been more about the regulation in terms of the bylaws, planning requirements and all of that, building plans, getting the submissions. I think we've seen a significant shift, particularly in Cape Town, where the city of Cape Town has recognized the impact of the small scale rental sector in terms of providing affordable housing, and they've put mechanisms in place to say, let's support them. And yes, infrastructure improvement is also linked with that conversation. It goes up until national. I think, yes, on our side, we had an initial publication that focused on financing, but it never took much traction. I think it's the entry point where, how do we enter those conversations with the mainstream banks, even with the state itself? The entities like your NHFCs, they have a role to play also in terms of financing the space. This year, our focus was to say, there's work underway around compliance. Let's focus on the financing aspect of it. And unfortunately, a few months back, I think it was in June, where we were presenting at the Western Cape Property Development Forum 10th conference around financing of the small-scale rental sector. So we co-presented this with Professor Francois Verilou in terms of what needs to be in place. And for us, we're putting out a model. And what Brian is speaking about in terms of looking at the potential of the development, rather not the affordability of the individual.
Or the geographic area.
Or the geographic area, yes. I think that's the one. And we got a bit of interest from entities. Hence, you heard in my opening remarks where I think when I was explaining the course, where African Bank was there. They're saying now we want to look into a commercial component. For example, it's not yet, but there is interest from certain institutions to say, let's create packages there's other institutions that we've been having conversation, but it ends up at conversation. I think for us, the major challenge is how do we unlock, or who raises that hand to open the door for us to have a conversation? I think that has been the major challenge, even for the sector itself. Yes, there are different players that are playing in the space, the microfinanciers, to name the few, OTAF, iBuild, Bitprops, Extender in Joburg, you name a few. So the response has been to say from the banks, we are working with the intermediaries because the intermediaries are familiar with the space. Yes, intermediaries have their own role to play, but you as the mainstream banks, you also have a role to play. Majority of your clients are banking with the mainstream banks. And if we look at previous stats, this notion of risk or defaults or fear around defaults, property seems to be the least, what's this? It's not flexible to access it. You can access a car vehicle finance worth 500,000 or 1 million to buy your Mercedes-Benz. It's easier to do that. But now when you want to unlock future assets, it's difficult for you to unlock that. I think that is a conversation that we need to have and be frank about it. And this is the lowest default market in terms of if we compare to others.
From a risk profile. Let's come to that. I mean, Luvo, your tenants, I'm not sure how many you have in through your three properties, but the vacancy rate, how does that work? How effective is your leasing strategy? Do you have a strategy, or is it that the demand is so overwhelming you don't have that problem?
I can say, I'm not sure if I'm lucky or fortunate enough to not have any defaulters, and at the same time, I don't have any vacancies. I think only during COVID, where it was only 1 month, someone was retrenched and then that person had to go to Eastern Cape. It was a matter of in the following month, I managed to get a tenant. So also on that note, I think it's about how you look after your tenants if you maintain your property, so that they must be appealing to whoever that is outside. Whoever is outside must be looking forward so that he can be occupy one of your rental units. So to answer your question straight about that one, in terms of defaulters, we're still lucky, I guess.
We've seen situations where financiers do what we call arm's length lending, where they give an individual without any support in terms of managing the construction site. Hence, now you'd find that buildings were not completed. And because one, they assess the affordability of the individual, not the project, and not without proper support and even the contractors in place. As a result, now you'd find that projects are not completed, the individual is not able to repay the loan. So now when we're thinking about financing or the model itself, whatever comes up, it needs to come with that technical support to ensure one, quality, compliance, everything is ticked. We've seen so many developers do want to comply and are willing, but it just requires that additional support.
Talking about arm's length lending, it does then transpire to a building that is not compliant. Because now as a financier, you have given this guy money that you think he can afford, and you haven't given him money that is feasible for the project. So now what happens is this client, can I make an example with you, Luvo? So Luvo has been given money.
So is this a real example?
This is a real example. So the financier has given Luvo money based on his affordability. Now Luvo is going to try by all means to use that money to complete his project. Now he is trying on his side to make sure that this and this and that is in so that he can get people to rent. But on that process, he can see that, okay, cool, this structure is livable, but there's X, Y, and Z that he must still do. There's a demand out there for people who want to come in and rent his structure. Now, because the financier has given money to him that he can afford and not feasible for the project, now he hasn't finished the project. Now someone comes in, they rent, and the structure is not yet finished. So it's a problem because now Luvo, or rather the tenant that has come in to rent, they're going to complain at some point in time that, Luvo, you said you're going to fix this and you said you're going to fix that. Now the tenant then will maybe move out to say, no, Luvo is not a serious landlord. Whereas Luvo is a serious landlord. He wants to finish his structure. But the financier has given him money that is not enough. So coming back to the technical support you are talking about, Wenachuma, to make sure that the structure is compliant, ticks all the boxes of safety and stuff like that, and that the lender gives the applicant or the client enough money to finish the structure. Technical support, making sure that everything is up to the nick to make sure that the tenant comes in, it's finished, you can have a hot shower, you can flush your toilet and all these things. Then you will have less, like if you go to Luvo's flats, I've been there, that's why he's experiencing no defaulters, because his structure is up to scratch and people, they see that it's clean, it's up to standard, everything is working. And he just said, make sure that your structure is maintained very well. But now when you don't have enough money to finish your structure, when the lender doesn't give you enough money to finish your structure, it's going to be difficult to maintain the structure, because you still have to finish this and finish that.
On that one, I think the money that we were that was given to us in our third project only covered, I think, 70 to 80% of the project. So we got stuck, and then we went back to the financier, and then we said, "Won't you please top it up?" It was a struggle to get a top up from that one. We had to write some motivation, go there, present that we'll be able to pay it back. So the point is, not all the time that the money that is given to the developers is enough. I'm just thinking about the micro developer out there who will start a project. If he can speak up and write those motivations in to get more funding, what is going to happen to that developer?
So, yeah. So there's a capacity. Focus. There's a capacity issue right there. Nosi, you've been wanting to come in. Thanks for your patience.
My point was just on what the role of CDA and maybe DEC in terms of this conversation about finance. So I think also the banks have been like skeptical to venture into this because of the missing data, or there isn't enough data to prove that this is functional in terms of that feasibility. And I think from our side, we've been since 2019 trying to keep track or trying to study what is happening within this township developer or township rental market. We created a WhatsApp Facebook group where people can advertise to rent or to look for a place, and they have to say how much are they offering or how much they are looking for. So for us was to understand where the supply and the demand is, and we've been scraping as well some data and producing some analysis of what is happening. So that can be used as well to support the conversation with the mainstream banks, because they always say that it's risky because we don't know what is happening. There isn't enough data to prove there is actually a market in these areas. So our role has been providing that data and that information to support that there are Luvos, there is demand and there is supply in these areas. But then there's still more work need to be done in other institutions need to come into play, like CAF and other CAFs, to collect more data to prove to the banks that this can work, and there needs to be customized model that can speak to the needs of these micro developers working in the township. Yes.
Thanks, Nosi. I think that's a really important and valuable approach that you've described there. What I'm hearing here, and this is open to the team, the risk, whether it's from the financial side, ultimately gets transferred to the person who's taken the loan. With that comes pressure, with that comes stress of getting the job done. And we've described how the ability, particularly where you're short on your cash flow to be able to do the basics, that pressure increases. How, if at all, are issues of mental health within this sector being looked at to manage the issue of extreme pressure, where at Luvo, you described Christmas of 2014-15, where the cupboard was bare. There was no money for that Christmas period, which we know is important for so many households in the country. Is this a blind spot? I'm asking that because I've spent a week talking where mental health has come up very, very regularly. I know it's often a lesser discussed subject, and here we are talking about the bricks, the mortar, but there's also the person. So I'm putting it out there and I'm testing that of, is it something you've thought about in terms of the way that you deal with your CDA program and the experiences that maybe Luvo and Brian have witnessed or experienced?
One thing I can say is that if you are a developer, you are on your own. It's lonely up there. So that's the only comment I have.
If I can come in there, Benapid, with my experience while working at the financier, there were a couple of clients who would call me to say, Brian, I'm facing this problem now. How can you guys assist? And at the time, I did not have powers to make any decision in terms of assisting that particular client. So I think there is a need where people are maybe counseled to deal with the everyday problems and maybe try to avoid clients getting into trouble with their finances, you know, your debt counseling or whatever, just to make sure that people know what they are getting themselves into. And also, like you said, the arm's length lending, I think it won't speak to the mental health of the client because they're just lending. But I think for this specific sector, to mitigate risk, I think it will be an easy one given the amount of data that is out there. And also to avoid that mental situation of a client, because I think the organizations that we can work with, there's strategies that we can do to ensure that these things, they don't end up the mental health of the client.
I don't think it's something that we've actually really intentionally talked about, because I think like we can look at it a different spectrum from the client, how the finance or managing these properties actually brings so much stress, and not just to the client, but the entire family. I think during the course of the developer course this year, people were sharing some of the experience, how it affects even their family, children getting Christmas clothes because they had to make the sacrifice or top up to make sure the development is complete. I agree with Brian that there needs to be that intentional, dedicated support to make sure that the client doesn't get into a financial distress that they did affect their family and their mental health. But I think on the side of the end users of this property, there's been some talks on how can make sure that the mental health of the tenants, because we're looking at densified places and some of these built units are not really like home friendly or livable. But then we've been having this conversation now within the team and also the City of Cape Town's urban design unit, looking at how can we create sustainable and livable places, not just creating like halls or dormants. How can we create rental units that have common spaces, like people can go, like they can actually leave, not just go and sleep in your rental unit, but have some space like a braai area, or even within the neighborhood, there has to be those dedicated social facilities to make sure that people,
parks, etc. Yes.
So there's that conversation and also work that is being done in partnership between DAG and the City of Cape Town Urban Design Unit. How can we also influence the developers themselves to think like that, that it's not just for profit, but there are people living there and their mental well-being is also very important. But we haven't really looked at the client or the micro-developer's well-being in terms of how it affects them.
Can I just come in there, Pete? I think there is a great need. I've just experienced what this major client of mine that I build rental units for. And sometimes I provide maintenance services to their units after we have built. Recently, Eskom has installed second connections to separate the actual house electrical supply or power supply to the house and the power supply to the rental units at the back. So it's two separate Eskom boxes that supply power to the whole property for the main house and for the flats. But now there's been teething experiences that the landlords have been experiencing. And now they call me at night, Brian, this is happening. Brian, that is happening. You need to go to that property because there's no power. So that mental health situation, I think it's really needed. I think it's really, really needed because it's going to pile up until maybe someone gets stressed, anxiety and whatever. And, you know, that could be a risk for a financier as well, because this person now cannot cope with this whole thing. So that proper training, which I think UDAG is much, much more capable of providing it within their developer space to equip the people to know how to deal with the tenant as well, because tenants can give a pressure. You know, they can give a pressure. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I also think there's also a role maybe property managers can play.
Yes.
Because we see in the other areas, the affluent areas, the big developers, they do like hire someone to do that whole property management, deal with the tenants and everything. And I think that can also, in this sector, especially for Luvos who have got multiple developments, they don't have to deal with all of that stress. I think with VFDEC, we've also been working with Bukwele 2 Holdings, who also do these property development in the township. So I think that role can really help to elevate some of the issues that Brian is talking about. And also with Cynthia, who's the director of Bukwele 2, the property management company, is that they also do look at the mental well-being and financial well-being of the tenants, because sometimes the tenants may not afford to live in the property this month, and then they actually downgrade them or place them into another property that they can afford until they bounce back financially. So I think there's a role for property management in this sector to help both the tenants and also the well-being of the micro developers. But we haven't really explored into that, property management.
I think one of the things that is understated, and listening to both Brian and Luvo, your stories of coming from the Eastern Cape, coming from a situation where you have nothing and building something to where you're actually creating an empire. And I mean that in a humble way. You're building something which allows a legacy, which provides an asset base, etc. And that brings its own pressures. These are their own pressures. It's a transformative journey that you've been on. And to deal with the stresses that come from all of a sudden multi-million rand lending and so forth, that's a long, long way from coming from the Eastern Cape as the son of a domestic worker where there was nothing. I think these are really important elements which I'm sort of reflecting on. It's come out from both of your stories. And that's why I think this issue is particularly important. It's one thing if you're the corporate CEO with a multi-billion rand portfolio. There's a degree of cushion and pressure that comes with that. But I'll guarantee you there's also an HR department that's putting an arm around that CEO to say, we'll support you. In this instance, it's the same stakes, but without that support network. Is that a fair reflection?
Yeah, I think it's a fair reflection, because those people also need a support within the space of small scale rental units. Because it's not a new sector, by the way. It's a very old sector. But the government has just been turning a blind eye to it with the banks. The banks do have a department, like, for example, if you have a bond with them and you can't pay, you are facing financial difficulty, I think there is a department that helps you to get back on your feet or to try and find ways on how to help you. But within this space, it's a problem because it's an old space, but those that are playing in this sector, it's still a developing sector, if I can put it that way. It's an old sector, but it's still developing for a long time. So there's new things that this sector must get, but it's just very slow. Yeah.
It's quite a touching one. Even though we haven't delved much in terms of looking at the mental well-being. Now, when you raised it, Pete, I reflected on my previous life before joining DAG as a building contractor like O'Brien. And what Uput Luvo is saying, that it's a lonely journey there. You'd find situations where, one, you can't pay your labors because there's payment delays somewhere. And you're looking at their faces, they're saying you're expecting something on a Friday or on a fortnight. And it does work on you to some extent, to a degree that, oh, I'm going back home, I'm going to warm up something in the fridge, yet the guys on the side didn't have anything to eat. Over time, it does get to you. And I think it comes in to say, now, seeing that there's a, for example, there's the TDF, Township Developers Forum. Understanding, yes, there's still teething phase in terms of gaining trust of the different members. But how do we start supporting each other in the space? Put Luvo is also part of the TDF as a member there, founding members. But then again, there's still that barriers or lack of saying, let's support one another. I think the question is, how do we turn entrepreneurship or the sector not to be a lonely journey for a person? Besides the technical, the financing, but also just having a person to communicate with.
I think that TDF is a great structure, although, yeah, in terms of traction, it's a new organization and we're still trying to get it up to its feet. I think once it has gained traction, I think it will support a lot in terms of the lonely journey that Luvo is talking about. Because if you look at the conversations on the group, people are talking, look, what do I do when the tenant has vandalized my property, or this tenant, they fight a lot with their girlfriend, or this tenant, it comes down to the landlord. So now TDF is there for them to voice it out, to say, look, man, I've got this problem. That lonely journey now that Luvo is talking about, it's slowly getting into a journey where now he belongs to a group of people that he can talk to say, look, I've got this problem. If anyone in the group has experienced it, how did you overcome it? It will also help in great, yeah.
Down the line, I think we must revisit the TDF and a specific conversation with the Township Developers Forum. It's clearly going places and has a real role to play. I think the point you're making about its traction, its early days, but where it's going, I think it'll be a really useful plug-in somewhere down the line. So Brian, we'll come knocking at your door to help us with a discussion with the members of the TDF in due course. I really want to say thank you very much to all four of you for joining us today. I've certainly, again, learned a great deal. I think it's been a real help to plug in to realities on the ground. It's been fantastic. And again, a huge appreciation, Luvo and Brian, for sharing your stories and the personal journey and transformation in your own space, and more strength to you and your teams that you work with to keep building, building, building. Before we wrap, anything round? Let's go around the doors. Kuma, anything from your side?
I think, Rapid, firstly, thank you so much for having us again. It's always nice having these conversations. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
I think for us, it's more on what I can pick up from the conversation is that we have our individual drive why we entered this space. If you listen to the stories, it's like heartwarming that I have to make a difference in the sector. And the sector doesn't just go about the brick and mortar, the structure itself. It goes far beyond that. It brings dignified houses to people. We haven't spoken about tenants. And yeah, we spoke about tenants, but essentially the work that we do, it's for the tenants in terms of providing that dignified house. There's spin-offs, there's work opportunities that are created short-term during construction, but also long-term towards maintenance, upkeep of the properties. So it has that effect, urban regeneration, changing the fabric of saying township as just state-subsidized houses. We're looking at now more vibrant neighborhoods, inclusive cities, and how do we integrate now the township areas with the broader city. I think having had conversation around transport connections, transport mobility, I think that's another one. Yes. Majority of the tenants do not own cars.
The game has changed, but some of those issues are perennial and still there.
Yeah, still there. I think it's a long way. I'm excited by this journey and seeing Abu Putluvo, who's on his fourth development right now, with Brian opening a company in during COVID. During COVID. So I think there is potential of this space, and we just need to sit down, call for different stakeholders, financiers. If you're listening, we want to have a conversation. There's potential to scale up the delivery of this sector, and we don't say that we have all the answers, but let's work collaboratively, co-create the solutions so that we can improve the living conditions of the South African citizens.
Thanks, Kuma. Powerful words. Nosi?
I think Kuma finished all the...
Has he taken all of the words that exist?
Yeah, but I think, I learned it. Thank you very much, Pete, for this platform. It was quite informative for me. And I think DEG is a learning organization, and I'm so proud that I'm actually part of this organization because I learn a lot every day. And I think out of this conversation, the issue of well-being and mental health across all spectrum, everyone is involved in the sector, from the landlords, the tenants, even the development facilitators, the officials on the ground. I think it's something that we need to be very intentional about. I think that for me, that's what stood out from today's conversation, because we never talk about it. We're being affected as when you go home, you think about all the people that you work with every day, all the lives that have been impacted by everything that we do. So mental health and well-being is something we need to be very intentional about. And as DEG, as I said, we're a learning organization. I'm sure the next year or two we'll be having a proper conversation or even something that we can do about this. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks, Nasiwe. Mm-hmm. Thanks for your inputs today. Brian?
Yes, I mean, this sector is a lot of stuff you can talk about. But if any of the banks would come across this podcast, make sure you tap into this sector. This sector has got a lot of opportunity. This sector needs you as the financiers. I'm saying that there are people on the ground with information. One of them is DAG. It's us, the contractors, the LUVOs, who are the developers. So as a bank, come on board and let us sit down and have a conversation so that we can help create this sector into a solid sector. When we look at your affluent suburbs, your parklands, your new lands, we see these structures coming up and built by people who are the same like us and providing housing to other people who are same like us. So why can't you, as the banks, come up with a product that can speak to us as this sector of low income, or rather the affordable rental space, so that we can help this space grow? There's a lot of growth in this space, but the banks or the financiers don't want to come to the party. NHFC, you've got something called FLISP for the first time homeowners or home buyers, whatever you call it. So why can't you have a program that is a FLISP that speaks to the small scale rental unit development, so that you as the government come up with a subsidy that you can, the very same way that FLISP, you know, works. Government comes up with a portion of the money, the private sector, which is the banks, they come up with a certain portion of the money. Then I think this sector will grow, because there's a lot of developers out there that want to grow in this sector. There's a lot of people out there that want to benefit in this sector in a form of renting a proper structure. There's a lot of people who are living in the shacks. They want to go and rent, but there's just not enough supply of these rental units. Like Luvo has said, he has never faced any tenant or a situation where the tenants are defaulting. And if one tenant goes out the next month or the next few weeks, that another tenant moves in, meaning that there's a lot of demand for this sector. I mean, as a contractor myself, Eastern Building Solutions, when we finish a project, there is just maybe a week after we have handed it over to our client, then people are already coming in, bringing their bags to come and live in these small rental units. So meaning that there is a high demand out there. So banks, come into this space and stop chickening. Thank you.
Before we come to Luvo, where can people find out more about you? LinkedIn and so forth, Brian?
You can go to LinkedIn, Brian Bango. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm very active there about the small scale rental units, about the affordable housing, about speak to us. We are the ones that are on the ground. We've got the information. We can tell you, or rather come and have a conversation with us, so that we can show you where are these demands and how you can tap into this market. My email address, it's brian@eastana. Eastana, everyone who is a Xhosa, or, you know, you'll know that Eastana means a brick. It's Istena, Eastana. You can get me there. You can get me on Facebook, Brian Bango. You can get me on WhatsApp, 072-533-441. That's me.
Thank you, Brian. Luvo.
I hope after this recording, we'll go as to many people, as many as we can out there. For example, a few weeks back, I was approached by a young man in Delft who saw my flats there, and he asked where to start. Of which I referred that person to DAG. And then after that, I hope the big boys out there, the likes of Dion, who are already there by the Western Cape Developers Forum, will also open opportunities for us so that we can also partner with them and also learn from them. That's all. Thank you.
Luvo, can people find you at all on any sort of social media if they want to engage with you?
I'm available on Facebook. My name is Inawa. It's Luvo Mayapi. That's where you find me on Facebook. Thank you.
What does Inawa mean, Luvo?
That's a very clever animal. It's character. It's a very clever animal. So I named myself as one of that animal.
Fantastic. Colleagues, have a lovely rest of your weekend. Thanks so much for giving up time, your time on a Saturday morning for this conversation. I say I've learned so much, completely inspiring stories. Keep doing what you're doing and speak to you in the next round.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay.
We hope you enjoyed this content of the Talking Transformation podcast. Please feel free to give us feedback via our Twitter platform. That's at TalkingTransfo and the number one. Or alternatively, via our email address, talkingtransformation101@gmail.com. Thanks and recognition also to Tribal Need for allowing us to use their track, Flags, as our introductory and closeout music on this podcast.